You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Ghost towns are sprinkled throughout British Columbia. There are hundreds of vanished communities stretching from the Alberta border to Vancouver Island. Some have become seasonal tourist sites. More often, all that remains is a dilapidated building or two. These towns died because they were no longer necessary or practical. Some small towns today face a similar fate, and they'll either transform or disappear. Greg Halseth is a professor of geography at the University of Northern British Columbia, and has written extensively on the challenges facing small towns, and he joins me by phone. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Lorraine.
Well, what are the problems threatening the survival of small towns today?
Well, the key issues for rural and small town places in BC really stem from the words diversity and dependence. We've really developed a robust resource industrial economy, but in many of those places we've been dependent upon either one large economic activity, say for example forestry, in some cases one large company, or in most other cases one large market into which our goods go, and so any upsets in those of course shake the foundations. And then, of course, the second piece from that, diversity, we've known for an awfully long time that we need, more legs on our table of economic prosperity, and moving within economic sectors, diversifying across those sectors, and adding in new economic activities. Those are really our challenges facing us today.
So if as you say that economic diversity is a key to the survival of small towns, how can that diversity be achieved? What would be the things that we would need to bring to small towns to add those extra legs to the table?
Yeah, we're at a really good period for this, because we've gone through sort of waves of support for economic diversification. Through the 60s and 70s, we had this very top-down exercise where a government would try to prime the pump in different regions and locales, and was sometimes quite divorced from where communities and regions were able to go. A little more recently, we've had a very strong voice from communities saying they want to take control of their economic destinies. But we often had government withdrawing from that, saying, okay, you are interested in doing it, then you do it, and we won't play a role. Whereas I think today we're becoming a lot more comfortable with the sense that small places have to divine their own destinies, a sense of where they're going, talk about their assets, see how those fit with their aspirations. But that senior government, because it holds so many critical policy levers, really has to be a key player at the table. So it's not one approach or the other approach. It's really a shared approach and a shared responsibility. If we look across where we need to pay attention, we've written about what we call the four infrastructures to support sort of the next rural economy. The first one would be physical infrastructure. Second one would be human infrastructure. Third, community infrastructure. And last one, our business or our economic development infrastructure. And all of these have had strength in the past. If we look to how BC went from a have-not to a have province in the 1950s, and then had a very long 30-year economic upturn and growth period, it was because we invested across all of those infrastructures, whereas that has been waning since about 1980. We haven't been doing it so well. And now, quite frankly, in many places, we're caught short, even when good opportunity comes.
Where does technology fit into this picture of developing infrastructure for small towns?
Yeah, technology is a really critical piece. In the 1950s and 60s, transportation was changing. Things were becoming a lot more efficient, and so we put in an extensive network of highway systems, and we put in an extensive network of small airports and those sorts of things to connect our communities to the economies of the world with the technology of the time. That's what we call the old economy infrastructure, and it needs to be renewed. It's outdated and can't handle the traffic that would be needed today. But there's another whole new layer of technology when we think of the global economy today, and that's the technology that communicates information. These have been well-developed in our urban centers, but the investment in rural and small-town places has lagged. And so this is what we call the new economy infrastructure. And if communities are going to be competitive in the new economy, they have to be able to use all of these infrastructures. So technology investment is a really critical piece. Just as a simple illustration about how the two mesh, you can think about a guide outfitter in northern BC, he'll pick a small town like Telegraph Creek, working with a high-end restaurant in Montreal. It's going to supply fresh wild game meat to that restaurant. It's possible to obtain that game meat and maybe even communicate by relatively slower information technology, websites and emails and those sorts of things. But if you get the order, how do you move your product? You got to put it on the Greyhound bus that doesn't run as often as it used to, and it has to go to an area, and the airport in the area has been closed, and so you have to go further to Terrace to ship it out. So meshing the two and investing in the two types of infrastructures are really critical.
You mentioned the role of provincial and federal governments in strengthening the infrastructure of small towns. Are there models of governments elsewhere that have shown more foresight in terms of strengthening small town economies?
Yeah, most of our competitors in OECD countries have paid a lot of attention to those four infrastructures in rural and small town places. If we look to the European Union, they have tremendously large programs in place in order to make their rural and their urban places a functional economic entity in the global economy. Japan's done something very similar. We see investments happening right now in Australia to try to catch up some of their infrastructure needs. So our competitors are doing it, and we've started on these paths. You know, we've got initiatives in place, but we're not moving on them as aggressively and as widely as we need to.
Now, to what extent do dependence on single industry or even a single corporation hamper the development of many localities?
Yeah, that's a really good question in small places, because if we've looked at the cycles of resource booms and busts since the 1970s, places and industries got into a fairly complacent a sort of pattern. Whenever there would be a downturn, everyone knew they just had to tighten their belts for a little while because there would be an economic upturn. But since the 1980s, while we've had up and downturns since then, the cycle's quite different. The booms are coming faster and they're going higher, but the busts are also coming quicker and becoming more severe. And when we come out of an economic downturn and things start to look better, the landscape is completely different. We're talking about lower cost production. We're talking about fewer employees in resource industry relative to product output. So it's not coming back the same way that it used to. And thus, we really need to change our thinking and beyond just, oh, well, there will be a next upswing soon, because the upswing is going to be a lot different than it had been in the past, and we can't expect it to carry us the way we did. As a simple example, we went into a good couple of year upswing here, and it's recently just taken a downturn. But many northern BC communities were able to get very limited benefits out of that upswing because they didn't have in place either the service industry sectors or the skilled trade sectors, or even in some cases, basic employee groups such as those who might work in restaurants and hotels and these sorts of things. So a boom swept over the area, but not every place was able to benefit as it had in the past. So the cycles are different today, and we can't just be complacent and say, well, it'll turn around in a year or two. It will, but when it turns around, it will be different than it was in the past.
Are there examples, Greg, of towns in BC which have achieved a significant strengthening and transformation?
Yeah, there's quite a number. The transformations up in Tumbler Ridge have been really cool. It's a very vibrant place now. The small community of Valemount, right at the entrance to Mount Robson, has done some really interesting things in the past. One of the ones that I think has been most successful would be the community of Terrace out in northwestern BC. Very strong forest industry community along the main road and rail line through towns. There were three giant sawmills that operated over time. Today, that forest manufacturing base has virtually disappeared, and yet the town continues to grow and be robust. About 15 years ago, they made a decision that their location along a transportation crossroads would let them be a service and supply center for the Northwest. And so they've strengthened their investments in hospitals, in the educational sector. They have brought in zoning and things that attracted retail entities, so really big Canadian Tire investments, really big Walmart investments, these kinds of things. So the community was preparing over the past 15 years for a different kind of economy and completely not expecting that their forest industry would take such a hit at this time. But since it has, they're in a much better position to respond and change and maintain a vibrancy in the community. As the mining industry comes and goes in the area, they too are poised because of investments they made in their airport to be a service and supply base for that mining activity. So 15 years of foresight and investment and really reimagining who they are as a small town has equipped Terrace to be quite competitive in today's economy.
So going forward, if governments do and government policy plays a role in preserving small towns, what shape would that take? What would that look like?
Well, we don't talk about the idea of preserving things because that has a kind of a moribund feel to it. We preserve heritage sites, the canneries out in Steeston, south of Vancouver, or Barkerville as a gold rush town. What we talk about is sort of the renewal of our small towns. And so it would involve pretty substantial investments in transportation infrastructure. Just look what benefits the Coquihalla Highway investment brought to the greater Kelowna region. I mean, it's paid itself off many times over. Would need significant investments in information technology to small places so that they can continue to market and be engaged in the global economy, attract people who want to work locally but stay in touch globally. We have to focus upon training our next generation of workers. Our next generation forestry industry is going to be very different in terms of the kinds of people they need than we've had in the past. New service, new supply, new government, public administration, all of these topics are important. Our First Nations communities are getting increasing responsibility for their own management and jurisdiction and development, and they need public administration capacity development there for people. We have to also focus upon our community infrastructure. We've been taking a really simplistic approach to services change in the province, and where we need to save money, we tend to cut services, and most of those cuts happen in small places. Well, if we marry technology and innovation, we can deliver services widely in small places in a cost-effective and really innovative way so that these remain viable places to be. So all of these are areas where there has to be significant bottom-up involvement. You know, where do we want to go? Who do we want to be as a community? But many of the levers remain essentially with the provincial and federal governments for support. So hence, the two need to work together. And then I guess, finally, the last thing that we really need to rediscover in British Columbia is something that we understood for a very long time, and that's that our metropolitan areas and our non-metropolitan areas are, in fact, knitted together as a functional economic player in the global economy. And if we nurture both of them, we'll both be successful.
Well, it's been great talking to you this morning, Greg. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Lorraine. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Greg Holseth. Greg is a professor at the University of Northern British Columbia. He's the author of Building Community in an Instant Town, a social geography of Mackenzie and Tumbler Ridge, BC, and that was published by UNBC Press.